More of Lake Effect Now on Milwaukee Public Radio, WUWM. I'm Mitch Tite.
And I'm Bonnie North. It almost goes without saying that Thanksgiving is a day that, for most of us, is about both gratitude and about food. For a Milwaukee-area woman, the two are inextricably linked. Kathy Biro survived two bouts with cancer by integrating wholesale changes in her diet with more conventional therapies.
Biro chronicles her story in a book called Eat, An Unconventional Decade in the Life of a Cancer Patient. EAT, standing for Evolve, Advocate, and Transform. She joined us in the studio not long ago, and Biro says today there is increasing attention paid to how diet can play a role in fighting cancer and other diseases, but that was not always the case.
12 years ago, when I was diagnosed the first time, there really wasn't a lot going on around food as medicine, around immunotherapy. I mean, there just wasn't a lot going on for cancer patients. Today, I think exactly what you said is true, that it's becoming more personalized and individualized, and that's a great thing. And really, what I wanted to illustrate for my readers and hopefully patients who are reading it, that it doesn't have to fit in a box the way you proceed through your treatment. And that's why we advocate for ourselves, we evolve, and eventually, hopefully, we transform into stronger people.
Well, and so before we get through the story without actually telling your story, I mean, obviously, to tell your full story would fill up more than we could do in a single radio interview, and that's why people, you know, can read your book. But give us a thumbnail sketch. You 12 years ago, you were diagnosed for the first time. You've been through a lot.
Been through a lot. I was first diagnosed with stage 4 inflammatory breast cancer, and that was 6 months after a clean mammogram. And so it was a surprise to everyone that it was so advanced. And a year later, I was diagnosed with another high-grade tumor in my head and neck. Both tumors were aggressive. Both tumors were rare. And so it really required me to think in a different way. And my kids were 2 and 7 when I was diagnosed. And it really just wasn't an option for me to die. It just wasn't. And I know that a lot of people would say that. And I think a lot of people who say that also get discouraged when they go to their doctor and they say, well, what about this and what about that? And the doctor says, just stick to the protocol. Just stick to what we know. And I wanted to show that you don't have to stick to what they know, that you can engage a much larger cache of tools that exist worldwide, not just here.
Right. And you say that's a key point here. It's a larger cache of tools. Your book is not, and you are not someone who necessarily throws the protocol out entirely here. We're talking really about complementary treatment and complementary medicine here.
So today it's called integrative medicine, and they are starting to teach it in medical school. And in fact, my integrative medicine doctor, who was the founder of the program at UW-Madison's medical school, is the editor of that textbook. It's in its 4th edition. And so the younger doctors are starting to learn what it means to integrate different modalities, you know, whether it's massage therapy or acupuncture, Reiki, which is a form of energy healing, whatever it is, that there is a way to use that with conventional medicine. And in my case, I'm 100% certain I would have died had I not engaged in all these different things. I feel pretty sure about that, sadly. But maybe I would have been lucky. But had I been lucky, I probably would be in a much more degraded state of health. And I think that's the other part of this, is that we might have patients surviving at greater rates today, but what is the quality of their life and survival? And there is a percentage, somewhere around 15% of patients will die from the side effects of the medication, along with 15 to 20% will die of malnutrition because they can't eat while they're sick. So there's the way that we're doing it isn't necessarily leading to a full and healthy life. We all hear about the new normal, And yes, you know, there's a new normal, but I don't want didn't want the new normal to be so far from my other normal. You know? So anyway.
Well, you mentioned all of these other modalities, mm-hmm. if you will, and you know, it should be said you went through chemotherapy, you went through radiation.
Correct.
When did food become such a key part of your return to health?
So that was an evolution, really. Because in the beginning, once I was diagnosed, my friend who wrote the foreword, he called and said, "You have to learn about this." And the word he used was anti-angiogenic foods and chemotherapies. And what that means is those are foods or chemotherapies that stop the unhealthy growth of blood vessels, which is what cancer and over 70 different diseases feed upon. And so he introduced that to me, and like every cancer patient, you know, my mind was just, please let me just do what the doctors are telling me to do. I am so overwhelmed. I've got my kids here. I can't even pick my head up off the table, let alone, you know, hear you tell me about this. And I know that was really difficult for him because he was over in Ireland and he was trying to figure out how to help. And so, but the good thing he did was he told me about this, the chemotherapies, the anti-angiogenic chemotherapies, which led me to a study on a drug called Avastin. They added it to my cocktail, and I'm sure that is a major reason why the tumor shrunk as quickly as it did, and then I had to have it removed, and then radiation. And I was sort of looking at the food and tired and not really that excited about working that hard to learn about it. And then I was diagnosed a second time. And for me, that was like the kick in the fanny. And I had started meditating. And during my meditations, it was, oh, I think I should really be paying attention to this. And that's when I really started delving into it.
I want to turn back for just a moment to anti-angiogenic foods. Mm-hmm. I mean, you talked about Avastin as part of your chemotherapy, mm-hmm. but when it came to the foods themselves, let's talk about the kinds of foods you're talking about.
Sure. So in the back of my book's a list of the foods that I ate, and it was a fun process, really, for me, because I read a book called The Anti-Cancer Book, and it was by a doctor by the name of David Servan-Schreiber, who had been testing an MRI machine, and the volunteer didn't show up. And so he was there with his partners, and he said, I'll get in it, and I'll do it. Well, they found he had a brain tumor. And he went through all the conventional treatments, went into remission, the tumor came back. He did it again, the tumor came back. Finally, he said, I'm not doing this. I'm going to use food. And he wrote a book. He lived 20 more years, and he wrote a book about it. And it was one of the few books that I could actually comprehend in the compromised state of a chemo brain. And he had this list of foods. And they were rated by the most potent against cancer. And, you know, we've all heard over the years, broccoli, you know, fights cancer. Broccoli is actually fairly low on the totem pole there. It's really the leeks and kale and garlic. And those are the ones that hit the hardest. The one thing I will say about kale is it's super popular, but people are eating it every day and they shouldn't be. It can cause kidney stones and other problems. So to all your listeners, 3 to 4 times a week max on the kale.
Whole Foods is going to disown you for
saying
that.
I know. I'm sure they'll be interested to know that. Spinach is another one like that. But so I read his book, and I started understanding that this was a possibility for me. And then I picked up the phone, and I started calling the scientists, because when I talked to my doctor about it, they didn't really have an understanding of food as medicine because they never were trained.
Right, that was not part of their
training. Right. And I don't, obviously, I understand that that's a limitation of their profession. And I think it's important for patients to understand that there are limitations in any profession, including your doctor. And so it's important to self-advocate.
Well, and so let me ask, is that the takeaway? I mean, because not everyone has a sister-in-law who's a physician assistant at Memorial Sloan Kettering. Not everyone has a friend, Larry, in Ireland, who's mm-hmm. going to call him and keep him from lying on the couch. Not everyone has a 60-acre farm at their disposal. So, you know, what's your message for people who, you know, feel like they don't have these controls over their life?
That's the beauty of today versus 12 years ago. There are so many farms that are operating as community-supported agriculture, or CSAs. So you can basically subscribe to this farm. You pay a fee in the beginning of, like, usually in January, February. And that gives you the right to, however they do it, a bag of groceries. We get a huge basket of groceries from ours every week through the growing season. And then we also have so much that I'm able to put the food up in the freezer or can it. But we have that in almost every state. So those CSAs are out there. Then there's the farmers markets. Now we also have our mainstream grocery stores carrying locally grown food. So there's kind of no excuse. You know, there's no really limitations there anymore. And on the side of being diagnosed and what's the latest, greatest, it's really easy to find information online. If you're not somebody who's online, there are plenty of people who are that will help you. And I coach people all the time who are battling cancer. And what I do with them is I'm not somebody who wants to keep them as a client for even a year. You know, I want to meet with them 2, 3, 4 times, and I want them to learn what they need to learn, to go and do the work on their own. And the reason that's really important, especially for a patient, is it gives you something to think about other than your diagnosis. Depression's huge among this population, and I know I suffered from it greatly, and having something to do for myself was not only empowering, but it helped lift me out of that fog.
Well, Kathy Bureau, we could easily talk for another 15 or 20 minutes, but I will just say continued good health.
Thank you so much. And to everyone else, I wish the same.
Wisconsin writer Kathy Bureau is the author of Eat, An Unconventional Decade in the Life of a Cancer Patient. Today, she works as a coach and consultant to help people in similar situations. You can find links to more about her story and her work at WUWM.com.